and welcome to another Physical Activity and Wellbeing and Education podcast episode with me, Kate Stevenson, Education Advisor and Physical Education Specialist in County Durham, UK. We continue our PE School Sport Physical Activity and Wellbeing dialogue today with another one of our delightful guests. Hello everyone, I am delighted to kickstart the new Physical Education Activity and Wellbeing podcast series with a very special and important guest. Listeners, let me introduce you to Sue Wilkinson, the CEO for the Association of Physical Education. Good morning, Sue. I'm delighted you could join us. How are you?
Good morning, Kate. I'm well, thank you. Probably not quite as exhausted as the whole workforce, who've done a brilliant job. And I'm not important at all. I'm not as important as all those people out there who've just been monumentally creative and innovative. So thanks for having me on. Hello, everybody. I hope you're resting and not listening to this today.
I hope, yeah, exactly. I hope they're out enjoying the sunny weather. It's suddenly taken a better spell than it has in the past couple of days with all that rain we've just had briefly. So just before we go kickstart into all things primary PE, et cetera, tell me a little bit about how you usually spend your summer.
I usually take 3 weeks off in the summer and go out to see family in Spain, and then obviously just have time out at home. My husband's a real National Trust geek, so we do lots of visits, which is wonderful, and then go and see our children up in Yorkshire and Oxfordshire. So usually do that, but that's been curtailed this year. We've done 48 weeks without a break, so for the first time ever we're going to shut the AFP office for 3 weeks just to ensure the staff get some time out and much earned rest. Yeah. So unusual on Kate, you know, but we are where we are.
We are. And you know, I'm sure the workforce are very much appreciative of the support the association has given over these strange and very difficult months. We're moving into almost 2 years of it now, and it's been a very difficult time for school staff in particular, as you've said. So the podcast today is rather timely, isn't it, Sue? Because this will go out a little bit later, colleagues, but, you know, we're hitting the start of August. So our deadline of the end of July for the reporting of a particular thing has just passed. So I'm sure there are many primary PE subject leaders listening to us today who are in receipt of that primary PE and school sport premium. So let's talk a little bit about that end of July deadline and the reporting compliance side of things, Sue.
Yeah, I mean, we've been inundated with questions, obviously, because there's carryovers, there's been different guidance, it keeps changing, but it's actually there now. You can carry over, you don't have to have spent it, but you do have to report. So some of the questions members and the wider sector have been asking is, you know, what happens if I haven't spent it? It's not an issue. This isn't a blame culture. What is important is the honesty and integrity and the moral commitment. We have an underspend, but we think this is the best way to spend this going forward. Do your review and everything. And, you know, there are some things on Twitter that slightly frustrate and disappoint our members about, you know, colleagues saying, oh, just make it up. Please don't, because if you're honest and committed to spending that, that's great, because then we get real intelligence about where's the underspend, what are the challenges. And for us, one of the challenges are all those children who have left primary school unable to swim through no one's fault except COVID. And, you know, it's important we get those figures, because then we can actually try and negotiate with government more money, more funding to get intervention strategies in place. You know, that's where the catch up has come, because, you know, Steve Parry is saying up to 1 million children could leave by 2025, not being able to swim or safe self-rescue. And, you know, I don't want to bring it up, but we've seen some horrific statistics over the summer already. And I'm sure, Kate, you know, you're with us here, aren't you? That I know you've done a lot behind the scenes to try and get schools to make sure they focus on that swimming element.
Yeah. And it's really important. You know, colleagues in Durham will know we've talked a lot about the fact that actually our Yessex cohort that have left us, or actually our primary school responsibility, until they step foot in that door into secondary. And actually some of that money that we have could be used, couldn't it, Sue, to support that swimming agenda? You know, if we're spending beyond the core subject swimming, then actually, you know, booster sessions, voucher systems, all of that could be used to actually support those children that have left us, as well as think about how we kickstart our programme in September for those, you know, focusing on those those end of key stage two children firstly. Would you say, Sue, that, you know, looking to September, that to be quite strategic about swimming, that actually it's those year five sixes that we need to focus on, rather than perhaps if we have in the past sent our year three swimming and maybe in that first term?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because nobody knows where we are with COVID, and we've got to live with that and manage it. But I think you're absolutely spot on. The creative and innovative ways colleagues have thought about how they can support our children to swim or safe self-rescue. The transition is an excellent point, because, as you say, they're still your children till August 31st. And if we can work with colleagues in secondary school so they understand and know how many of their children are coming in who can't swim. And it's not only the new year sevens, it'll be year eights as well. So we've got the secondary teacher training programme. We've got underspend, as we know, in the primary P. Can they work together? DfE and particularly Minister Gibb are really supportive of getting our schools working together to get the swimming addressed. And as you say, maybe it's year five, six and even year four, because we just never know if we'll have another lockdown, when it'll happen again. So we can get children swimming as soon as possible. And is it good to do blocks and then follow it up later in the year? Can we be more creative with how we present that? Is it once a week? Is that the best way? Or is it good to, we've seen some excellent practice where there's been a timetable suspension for a week and there's been a real focus on getting children swimming and then it's picked up later in the year. And also negotiating with your local leisure centres and your local independent schools. We have one locally who's done blocks of 10 lessons at very cheap prices, so they're more accessible to parents, or you can use your vouchers, as you say. So be as creative. Nobody ever gets criticised for being innovative.
Absolutely. And it's that dry side understanding of water safety as well, isn't it, Sue? We talked to colleagues a lot before the summer break about, have we ensured that our children, right from reception all the way through to year six and beyond, are aware of drown prevention, of water safety, how to float to survive, or the effects of deep water and cold water shock, for instance. And I've talked to colleagues in the PE sector, but also around the personal social health education sector, about actually their commitment as a school to ensure children are safe and keep themselves and each other safe. So thinking about, actually, it's not just a quick fix because it happens to be Drown Prevention Week, for instance, and we do an assembly on it for everybody. That's great and that's very valid. But is there something that is revisited, as it would be in a curriculum content dialogue, you know, right from reception? Is there a text we look at to do with water safety, and then it's built on in year one all the way through to year six, or really understanding it and linking it to their swimming provision? You know, it's a whole school approach, isn't it, Sue, rather than just the PE responsibility.
Absolutely. That's the silver bullet, the curriculum connectivity. I mean, Swim England, RLSS and AFPI, we've all worked together. There's fantastic free resources about, you know, what can you do on dry land? Can we take them into the hall or the gym and have a look at what we can do? Can we actually talk in other areas of the curriculum about cold water shock? You know, what would you do? And that whole PSHE about supporting one another. You know, you don't jump in to save a friend. That's not the safest way to do it. You know, how would you do all the problem solving? So that can be reinforced constantly throughout the year. And that is quite cheap to do. you know, you're not having travel costs or anything. We don't want dry land to replace it though, Kate, because Absolutely. We all know there's that transition. But if it can be reinforced then when you go back into the water, they've got that learning and understanding. You know, little quizzes, and more importantly, let's take them home so the parents understand the implications. And parents and carers know, you know, grandparents as well, the shock of falling in the canal, you know, what it can do, not only for them, but for the parents and grandparents too. You know, they Absolutely. Could fall in as well.
Yeah, and it's crazy, isn't it, to think that the priority of swimming isn't perhaps what it should be when we live on an island and we're surrounded by water. We're surrounded by cold North Sea water in particular here, and canals and rivers all over. And that, you know, the safety aspect is crucial.
Well, and also it's fantastic to see the open water swimming as well. That's great. We all know what swimming does for our emotional well-being as well as our physical, but it's also understanding as well that there are implications, and these are, you know, it's great doing it safely.
Yeah. And actually that kind of gets me thinking about beyond the fear and the safety aspect of swimming, of needing to get those minimum standards, you know, that's kind of a leveling up, if you like, to ensure we've got that minimum provision. But actually, you know, learning to swim opens up a huge range of opportunities for children. And if we're thinking about broadening experiences and opportunities within other sports and physical activity, you know, I was sat on Beanhill Beach. I was telling my colleague Donna about it, and seeing people stand up paddleboarding, kayaking, sailing. My dad and I are desperate to go wakeboarding, and all of those opportunities, you know, without that minimum competency in swimming, it would be shut off to us. And we're thinking about, you know, residentials that children go on, that actually, you know, are we preparing our children to experience other areas of activity confidently, competently, without fear, with knowledge of safety, but just broadening up opportunity. And it could lead to so much, couldn't it?
Absolutely. And that, all the things you've mentioned, you know, the kayaking, canoeing, building the core as well for them to be able to stand up on a paddleboard, and linking that with your gymnastics and your dance. Look, this opens up a whole range of activities. And, you know, that's where residentials are fantastic, aren't they? I mean, they're really good. And we say, you know, you have to take a suitable risk and acceptable risk and suitable challenge. And as long as that is in place, then we're opening up a whole new world for our children and young people, you know, not only now, but going forward. And if it's all about getting them active, it may be they don't like a traditional invasion games, but they love the orienteering. They love perhaps paddleboarding or kayaking, canoeing, as you say, the whole outdoors, climbing. And that core stability really will help them with all other activities. And, you know, following my paralysis, I know better than anyone, to have a strong core will stand you in good stead until you're in your 80s. Not that I'm 80, Kate, but
no,
you know, it does. You know, my father's 86, and he's a great sportsman, and really had a strong core. And when he fell, that's what helped him, sort of on the mend, sort of thing. So it's a cradle to grave thing. P is for life here.
Yes, it's that physical literacy, isn't it? Yeah. So we're not just about the doing; we're about engaging the enjoyment for children, but that self-motivation to be lifelong movers. And like you say, you know, if we trip over or slip on ice, we're more likely to recover and not hurt ourselves as badly, or recover from a nasty injury perhaps quicker if we have that physical literacy and health and fitness. You know, it is a life skill, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And just touching a little bit on there when you talked about that transference of skill, thinking about the core stability for stand-up paddleboarding, all of that. And it just gets me thinking about our physical education curriculum. Because although we may have a big incentive to be physically active and we're doing lots of other things, what I'm always mindful of is that we don't replace the hot, sweaty stuff that happens in and around the school day with the core physical education lessons that build skill, that are progressive and accumulative in learning. So let's talk a little bit about curriculum, and how actually that sets up our children to later make those choices of being physically literate and engaging in any activity they like, because they've got those fundamental skills, those ABCs, if we like.
I mean, absolutely. And you know, I'm a real supporter of this, because we had a wonderful HMI called Carol Raymond, who talked about the busy, happy, good syndrome, you know, and the red and hot and sweaty. And that actually isn't education through the physical domain. That is great. And yes, of course, we want all of our children to have fun and enjoyment. But those pillars of learning have to be built up. They have to have mastery of learning, else the skills don't transfer. And when we're doing our curriculum, you know, perhaps sometimes we're guilty of maybe doing marking the space or throwing and catching and then repeat it in another activity, when we actually should be building on those skills to get that progression and development. And we see, you know, P, as you know, is that moving to learn, learning to move. That leads to you engaging in enrichment activities and school sport, which hopefully will then lead you into community. So it's a seamless transition. And if any parts of those jigsaws aren't in the right place, then actually the whole picture is dysfunctional. So that building on the skills and getting that progression so they are physically competent, they can move and learn as they're doing, is different to just being running around. That is important, but it is more important to be physically competent, because they can't run around if they are unable to put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, and that goes back to articulating and understanding as well. So it's not just doing, but we're actually engrossed in the opportunity. We're talking about it. We're cognitively engaging, I guess I'm trying to say, so that it actually becomes problem solving. It becomes creative. You're selecting and applying those skills. And actually, that's when I talk about physical education as being really cognitive and engaging. And it is an academic subject. It's not just physical, because you develop those decision-making skills, those application of skills in different contexts. And if you have that physical capability, you can conquer anything almost.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And that's where COVID's probably had its biggest impact on our children and young people, because that of physical, emotional, social, cognitive development has really been fractured through no one's fault except COVID. And everybody, you know, parents, carers and the whole workforce has tried to help with that. But until young people are back in the school and are actually focusing on those emotional and social skills, then we won't actually build up the cognitive development, you know. And we know, particularly colleagues we've been talking to in the early years, that children have actually lost that core, functional core stability. So they're finding it hard to sit up in the classroom holding their pen. You know, there's some regression there. So that whole focus and concentration on physical education is important. And where we're seeing, we did a big pilot, and our colleagues went out and actually visited where they could our quality mark schools, and you can see where they put PE front and central, they're actually making massive inroads. And one school suspended the whole timetable for 2 weeks, and it was all about physical education, music, drama, the arts, to build up the confidence so children could re-engage, because they'd become anxious, they'd become distant, they'd lost their confidence, they couldn't socialise appropriately with their, you know, their peers. And that is massive, and that's perhaps what we don't see. So this whole teaching physically, socially, emotionally and cognitive development through PE is absolutely critical. And that new qualification we've introduced has taken off exponentially, and it has really helped get PE at the front of and centre of the curriculum. You know, and head teachers are saying without that, you know, some of the heads we spoke to said, you know, children were actually regressing and we need to rebuild that. I hate the term catch up, you know, because we've got a unique generation of young people who've come through this. You know, they have really tried hard, but we need to look where these young people are, build them up through PE so they can attain in other areas of the curriculum. You're absolutely right. PE is an academic subject. It's just done through a practical, physical domain.
Yeah. And thinking about that, Sue, I always think it's crucial to raise the profile of PE in that way that you've mentioned, and also get parents and governors on board. Sometimes it's a little bit of education around what physical education is, and understanding how crucial it is, especially when we're thinking about COVID. And like you say, it's not a catch-up of filling in the gaps of curriculum. It's about this recovery, but a recovery in that support, as in we're identifying the needs of our children and supporting them appropriately, physically, emotionally, cognitively, etc. That's lovely. So let's touch a little bit around physical activity and the importance of it. We've done an awful lot in County Durham around our Active 30 Durham agenda, thinking about those 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous activity that our Chief Medical Officer recommends. And we've identified that as a need in our schools to get at least a minimum of 30 minutes as much as possible each and every day in snippets, in 5 minute, 2 minute intervals all over. And I guess what I've said to schools is every little helps. More is better than less. Something is better than nothing. And it's not about time watching and saying, right, that's 30 minutes of movement. Great. It's about how we accumulate movement and reduce sedentary behavior throughout the day, basically.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And the whole issue around play, and you're right, it's about re-educating and revisiting in some areas, because you talk about play and often people will refer to sedentary play, which is critical and important, but we want play to be really active. So can we look at our playgrounds? Are they really active? You know, way back in the 90s when I was PE advisor, we looked at playgrounds then, and there were certain groups of children who would just sit quietly and didn't want to be active. And we thought that was important then. So we had quiet areas because it was dominated by maybe, you know, football games or something. But I think we've got to look at what we're doing in the playgrounds now. And I was actually walking past a school one day, and they'd done a brilliant job because they'd had to zone off in bubbles because of COVID. There were different areas. It was cleaned and then they rotated. So all children got different activities, some really physically active, others less so. So this whole notion of play at break times and lunch times is important. Active travel to school. You know, do we really know how children come to school? You know, can we encourage, can we send equipment home? And also, I'd ask colleagues to look at extracurricular activities. Absolutely vital that we get the school sport competition back in. But what about our young people who just want to be active, just want to do a skipping club? Not a competition, but it's competition about the self. So we're encouraging that, you know, beating your time and so on. Or, you know, what happens if they just want to do a bit of dance, as long as it's active, but it's less formal than we used to. So I think that's important as well. And we hear about having active curriculum subjects. I'm very privileged to sort of be working with Andy Daly-Smith and the guys in Yorkshire Sport. And Andy was on our working task group. And, you know, he was talking about the importance of it being relevant. Because if we're just getting children to jump up in the middle of a maths lesson because they need to move about, is that relevant? Or are we actually doing activity that reinforces the learning in that maths lesson? And we were very lucky to film in a school called Sandal Castle in Wakefield. And I sat in an English lesson and the hairs on my neck stood up to see this teacher teaching nouns through physical activity, but it was relevant. It was pre-COVID. So a collective noun was going round, you know, hugging and collecting things to reinforce that. And amazingly, those children who were kinesthetic learners grasped it much better than if they were sat in front of a whiteboard. So let's look at how we can be active in the classroom that reinforces the learning in that subject. But also we talk about, and it's also important to stimulate the brain. So we don't just suddenly jump up because we've been sat for 30 minutes. It's actually relevant. And, you know, there's some great products out there you can use, some, you know, commercial products that you can actually help you be active in maths that is relevant to addition and multiplication. Because we don't want to detract from children's learning in a specific context, but we need to widen how children learn, you know, kinesthetically, auditively, visually. And also, let's link it back to PE. If we're sat in, we're having the orienteering in geography, let's make sure we're doing that in PE. So it links to the, you know, we've orientated around the school. Now we're going to go out and do that in PE. And that reinforces that learning and that grasp. So let's be physically active from when we arrive in the school to when we leave, but in the right context.
Absolutely. It's that whole school embedded approach, yes, isn't it? Yes. And we've worked in County Durham a little bit around this, especially we've done quite a few CPD opportunities around active learning. And some of those ideas that I bring to the table, if you like, or pedagogical approaches that aren't inventing anything new, Sue. Yeah. They're just reimagining, perhaps, or remembering what it is to present a creative learning opportunity to our children. And we sometimes get pressured into that evidence in books type activity, when actually the learning comes from and the evidence of learning comes from your pupil outcomes. And your pupil outcomes are not necessarily what's written on paper, but also how they articulate, how they engage, how they understand and apply their skills in mathematics or English. And sometimes our learning is concreted more so if we're doing it whilst moving in an engaging sort of way, and there's tons of opportunities to do that, especially in and around maths and English, but creatively, as you say, in and around links to geography, links into history, and you know, it's about good pedagogical approaches. We're very good at that in primary. We sometimes forget we are, and this is often where I make that link into PE, when non-sport specific teaching staff are very fearful of physical education, teaching and learning, and yet they've got fabulous pedagogical approaches delivering history or geography or English and maths. And actually, it's about how you present learning to children. And you can very much be upskilled to deliver a really great physical education lesson if you've got those teaching skills, and you just need to be upskilled on some of the activities and physical specific qualities of a good lesson and progression of unit of work as well. That's great. Thanks, Sue. I was thinking about that you touched on that meaningful approach and not just jumping up and down in between to reduce sedentary. And we touched about that embedded whole school approach. I do always find that it's still the PE leader that has to push for that. And I talk a lot about, you know, can it not be your maths coordinator or your English literacy coordinator that actually drives that model of active learning, so that there's someone else on your battlefield, if you like, to get it to be a whole school approach and not just the responsibility of the PE lead. What would you say, Sue, is the key message perhaps to get all staff involved?
Yeah, I mean, you are great, Kate, in Durham. You've got that whole school improvement agenda there. And I think you've said it, primary colleagues are so experienced in pedagogy. They really are absolutely brilliant. And it's transferring that right across all the curriculum activities. You know, my colleagues in the Council for Subject Association would say the same. It, colleagues in geography, colleagues in drama will say exactly the same. And I think what we need to do is work as a team. We are team emotional health and well-being, and actually we can drive that through various activities, but let's use being active in maths, and let's get the maths subject lead up there saying, you know, physical education is really important, so is mathematics, and actually being active, we're going to put that through. So you get a team of colleagues together, perhaps all the subject leaders in the primary school, to say, you know, we're all good pedagogies. What we might lack is technical knowledge in some areas. So as you say, get that. We're calling it professional excellence now. You know, we've reframed the professional development. Say, let's get that professional excellence so we understand each other's subjects, the contribution to physical and emotional well-being. I'm just talking to my colleagues in drama. You know, they're absolutely, you know, right and say, PE leads through the physical domain, but we can bring some emotional well-being. And I had quite a discussion with Minister Gibb about, you know, he said music will say they do exactly the same to you. So I went to my music colleagues and said, you know, can you help here? And they're absolutely right. They're saying, yep, we can contribute to emotional health and well-being. But you've got to drive the physical. And I said, well, can you do some physical things through music? So I think once you have that dialogue, it's not a competition. Yeah. It's reinforcing front and centre how our children's well-being is really important. All subjects can contribute, but when it comes to the physical, we lead in PE. So let's get all the subject leaders together working on this, the contribution. Let's put a whole school improvement there, and we're going to drive this, because the school improvement will come if we're all working as a collective team. And as you say, it's not always responsibility of the PE lead. They can be the advocate, but they can also upskill their colleagues and look at the contribution your subject's making. Because if we all feel valued and confident, we'll all work together like the young people do.
Absolutely. You talked a little bit there, Sue, about professional excellence, and that kind of leads me into thinking about the task force. And would you like to share to our listeners about what the task force is all about, who's involved, and what's the key drive for having it?
Well, it was born really about, we felt physical education was sort of not being neglected, but not having the status it required, and was tended to be overtaken by sport. And we know that school sport is really important. We know physical activity, but as I said earlier, it's a map. It's a really important jigsaw. So we decided to get different people together, because we know great colleagues who can articulate the case. We thought we'd get different people from the medical profession, some behaviourists, some physical education experts as well, people who are NQTs, what are the challenges for you, and researchers, and those who are very knowledgeable about physical activity and school sports. So the task group itself was formed. We then needed advocates who could get the message out there in the press, like Jason Robinson, who came on a true physical education journey, and a really unusual journey for a rugby player too. So he's been really supportive. And of course, Edward, as the former education minister, who actually created the primary premium, who led on that and was innovative in bringing three departments together, because it is about education, it is about sport, and it is about health. So he's chaired it. It's taken a bit longer than we hoped with COVID, but out of that came recommendations, many of which are not new, but they've been said by different people. And we feel the key to all of this is great teaching and learning. So if you've got a fantastic workforce, you will have great outcomes, but there are barriers in there that are preventing our workforce putting PE front and central. And that is obviously the pressure to perform in other areas. And what we've got to do is advocate to say, actually, if your PE is good, here is the evidence that says other areas of the curriculum will improve, whether it's early years through to 16-year-olds. You know, it's really important. And we have the evidence from the schools who've done that, who've taken that leap of faith. So it's working with those head teachers to actually try and improve the knowledge and advocacy with other head teachers. And then we also wanted to look at how do we get PE right in the curriculum, because we don't always, and we've got to be honest, because if it was perfect, we wouldn't have the issues. And what is clear is a lot of the issues were around before COVID. We have inactivity, we have children that we need to level up here in society that are not getting the opportunities and are disadvantaged. But we also need to stretch our more able children. So there's lots of things in there, but it centres around getting PE, the equivalent of core status, and putting it front of central. And there'll be some exciting announcements in September, I hope. And what AFP is going to do is put out there for members, school improvement colleagues who will work, you know, may want to work with you, but you're very lucky in Durham, you've got PE specialist advisors. Where there isn't, we'll try and support. Because what the interviews were telling us is some of the workforce are just so innovative, but there are barriers from senior leadership to say, but we have to achieve these results. And it's supporting them to say, but if we've got a good PE curriculum, our SATs may improve, our GCSE may improve. Because now more than ever, young people need support for their emotional well-being as well, Kate. As well as being physically active. If they're too tired and not taking in information, they're not going to remember things. We've got to inspire our young people. And the inspiration comes from great teaching and learning. There's a great quote I'm going to plagiarise from Sydney Hook is, children don't remember products. They do not remember systems and programmes. What they remember is a great teacher, where that teacher's got them. And our workforce are just so special. They need to be valued as well. I have never seen a workforce so exhausted and shattered and demotivated in a way as we've got now, and we need to just give them a great boost and say, come on, young people are surviving because of you, and they're not just surviving, they're thriving.
Yeah, And that's a key message about that thriving, not just surviving. Yeah. And a lovely message there, Sue, about our workforce, because they are exhausted. We're all exhausted. But we do everything, don't we, for those children and young people. And that's something we need to celebrate, I think, a little bit more than we do. Yeah. You know, touching on that negative press, if you like, or the incorrect dialogue around the premium or whatever, we know how much, positive pupil outcomes we can get from a quality PE programme and a broader quality PESPA, PE school sport physical activity provision in school. And like you've said about those outcomes that we want cognitively, academically, etc., that we have the pressure about, SAT results, etc., that actually it's not about replacing what we have with the PE. It's about the PE actually can be the vehicle to do all of those things and better. And like you say, you know, raise those standards. We've really got to raise this profile, haven't we? And that's about the dialogue we have, Sue. It's about these podcasts. It's about our colleagues talking to each other. It's about correct use of social media, and informing our parents too, you know, getting it into the community about how important PE is, and seeking the understanding from our children and young people. So that pupil voice is really crucial, isn't it, about getting it right for them.
Yeah, and a pupil voice can really influence parents, carers, grandparents, and it's understanding what it is to be physically active. You know, I was stood in COVID queuing to go in a shop, and this little person was saying, but I want to go to the park. I want to go on my skateboard. And you know, parents are tired and everything. Oh, I don't like that. I get you to go with your friends. And it's about getting your parents on side as well. And when you see them gardening or with the vacuum or the mop or cleaning windows, it explains you're really physically active. It doesn't have to be necessarily a sporting activity. And that helps build parents' confidence. Yeah, okay, I'll come for a walk because you like walking, but I like actually hoovering, you know, I don't, but you know, that you see where I'm coming from here, you know, and you're gardening, that's really active, getting the children in the gardening and getting them physically active and the heart beating, and celebrate that with parents. And then you've got parents who love the activity. So it's leveling up. So parents understand actually being physically active is important. I don't have to be a runner as long as we're physically active as a family, and different parts of the family will like different elements of different activities. And I think that is key, and we've seen that. We also interviewed a lot of teachers, and you know, one of them said to me, I said, look what you've done for these children and young back, you know, never look back except to see how far you've traveled. And they said, well, doesn't everyone do what we do? And our colleagues out there are so humble, Kate, they do not realize how good they are. And this is part of the advocacy. When SATs are constantly improving, and it was Joe Wilkinson in Derby, you know, had this great piece of insight that actually the more PE they did, the better the SATs go. And we need to say, actually, do you think part of the solution was doing more PE? Have we got better SATs because our children are physically, emotionally better? Now, it's not taking all the credit, but it's our contribution to improvement. That's what we've got to shout about and advocate. And we just need colleagues to say, come on, you helped achieve this and you need to shout about it. When you go in for your appraisal, for your personal development interview, just put the contribution of PE and what you've done as a subject leader for it in your school. Absolutely. You know, you really need to shout about this. Because, you know, what it's quite interesting when you look at social media about Ofsted and, you know, it gets a lot of bad press. What is the first thing senior leaders or governors do when they get an outstanding Ofsted? They buy that blooming 200-foot poster that says St Cuthbert is outstanding. Well, we need to do that with PE. PE is outstanding in the school, and look at the contribution it's made to young people's lives. You know, and when you hear children on interviews saying, yeah, I just love my PE, and we've got snippets from our quality mark, and these children are so articulate. You know, that they are really good at saying how good they are. Get some snippets, get them on your website. Have a video running in the school so when parents come in, they can see their children love PE and love the school. And it's little things, subtle things like that on social media where we hear our children talking about PE and school sport and physical activity. So I'd like to see every school in Durham with that on social media, and we'll retweet, we'll take over Twitter, retweeting the positive contribution of the PE workforce out there.
That sounds like a challenge, Sue. So definitely. Yeah. And we've got some huge banners with our Active 30. We are an Active 30 school, Active Engaged, which is what it's about. But you're right. I would like to see physical education at the forefront and central, as you've said. That's marvellous. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sue. There's so much more I want to talk to you about. So I will ask you to rejoin us at some point in the academic year. And we must try and meet up for a coffee or a cocktail at some point, COVID safe as well. But we really value your time. Well, is there anything you'd like to say to our workforce who are currently in their summer break at the moment? They'll listen to this, I'm sure, when they come back in September. Is there any key message you want to say on behalf of AFBE to colleagues out there?
First of all, two little words, and that is thank you. And that's really from the heart. Thank you, because we can't do it without you. You know, you are the bedrock of the education system. Without teachers, we have nothing, and teaching assistants, everyone in the workforce. Secondly, believe in what you do. And thirdly, have some hope, because we're going to get there. We will get there because you're a positive workforce, and we will come out of this eventually. And I think it's important to have lessons learned. It's a unique set of circumstances which will produce a unique set of children and young people. I think they'll be more resilient, and I think that's down to your support. So just have faith and keep going and believe in what you do, and keep advocating for PE.
Sue Wilkinson, thank you very much.
Thank you for asking us to join you. You're doing a great job in Durham. Keep it up, Kate, and thank you for what you do. And Donna.
Yes, welcome. Donna's in the background there. Thank you.
Take care.